Pursuant to House Rule 10.01, this meeting of the Housing Finance and Policy Committee will come to order. Mr. Wilcox, please take the roll.
Houseman?
Present.
Howard?
Present.
Tice?
Present.
McBadge?
Present.
Bliss?
Present.
Gomez?
Present.
Hassan? Hassan? Heinrich?
Present.
Herr?
Present.
Juergens?
Juergens, present.
Olson?
Present.
Farr?
Present.
Ryer?
Present.
Madam Chair, we do have a quorum.
Thank you. Next order of business is approval of the minutes from Thursday, February 25. Representative Howard, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
Yes, Madam Chair, so moved.
Representative Howard moves approval of the minutes. Any discussion? Members, if you unmute yourselves for a voice vote, all those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. We have three bills up today, members. House File 998, Representative Schultz is the first one. I will move that House File 998 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. Representative Schultz, I don't know if you heard a last minute a decision that this bill needed to go to taxes. So that's included in my motion. Representative Schultz, to your bill.
Thank you, Chair Houseman and members of the committee. House File 998 amends the Workforce and Affordable Home Ownership Development Program to allow the Commissioner of the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency to provide loans in addition to grants for workforce and affordable homeownership projects. The bill establishes a workforce and affordable homeownership development account in the Housing Development Fund to provide supplemental funding for the program. So during fiscal years 2022 to 2032, the Commissioner of Revenue must annually deposit any incremental amount from the mortgage registry tax and the deed tax into the account. And the increment is calculated as the amount in excess of the total amount of the registry and deed tax proceeds collected in the prior fiscal year. This bill was initially brought forward and drafted by Representative Fabian, the original underlying language, to establish the fund and the program in 2016. It has bipartisan support in the House, and Senator Senjum is carrying it in the Senate. And I'd like to introduce my first speaker, which I think is Jeff Corey.
We have two testifiers, Jeff Corey, One Roof Community Housing from Duluth. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you kindly. Jeff Corey, Executive Director at One Roof Community Housing.
Please proceed.
Thank you. I'll leave my comments in three directions this morning. One, a very brief overview of One Roof, where we are and how this connects to the bill. A bit of talk about the coalition of groups that are asking for supporting this bill. And then just a little bit about the why of the bill in terms of where we're coming from with the push from the community. So One Roof is a nonprofit affordable housing organization, community-based. Our offices are in Duluth. We serve Duluth and surrounding communities from Cloquet all the way up to Grand Marais. We do a full range of different affordable homeownership work, or affordable housing work, from homeownership development, loans to improve housing, multifamily housing development projects that are for the local workforce, as well as for folks that are experiencing homelessness, home buyer education and counseling, and we also do tenant landlord education, problem solving and mediation. So soup to nuts, most of the things a group could do in affordable housing we're involved in up here. Why we do that work is because the housing market, frankly, is a challenging thing for folks that are of lower incomes. And so we like to say that we make home a better place. All of the things that we do are geared toward doing that, so that folks that we serve have a stable place to call home, so that that platform, that can be a platform from them to be able to go out into the world and, perform at their jobs in better ways, perform at school, be active in their communities. If we all think of what it would be like to not have a stable home and how we would function day to day if we didn't know that we were going to be able to stay there. Home is really sort of like food, like shelter, like clothing, in terms of people's ability to just function in our communities. And so that's what we're about. And in our community of Duluth and surrounding areas, home ownership is super important because our housing stock is generally smaller in size and more suitable to being ownership housing. The fabric of our neighborhoods look like that. And so while we do larger multifamily projects, it's very important that we're also advocating for taking care of our existing stock and adding housing units into that, the fabric of those neighborhoods that fit in and that, work for the folks that live here in our service area. The Homeownership Minnesota Group is a broad coalition of folks that, you know, spans the state in terms of service area and what we do is all quite similar in terms of we're all working on various homeownership endeavors, affordable homeownership endeavors. So Habitat Minnesota, which has 20 some members, is part of our coalition. Twin Cities Habitat is part of One Residence Group, a couple of community land trusts, Dayton's Bluff NHS, the North Country Cooperative Foundation that does manufactured housing work. These are just a sample. The Homeownership Center of Minnesota, all of these groups are part of advocating for what we're looking for in terms of increased investment for homeownership, affordable homeownership in Minnesota. Our previous progress with this particular initiative is that there has been some funding appropriated. In 2016, $750,000 was appropriated to the program. The first round was ridiculously oversubscribed in terms of the applications for the amount of funding that was available. Recently, we managed to get another appropriation and then to get $250,000 in the base. We're working collectively with this group to increase homeownership investment to $30 million or higher per year so that we can actually serve the demand that exists in our communities. And my colleague, Jeff Washburn, who will speak in a bit, we'll talk a bit more about that. So the idea of capturing the growth in the mortgage registry and deed tax is a pretty simple one, really. As that revenue source grows, the notion is it grows because of real estate transactions that happen, and we would use that growth that happens incrementally each year to invest in affordable homeownership. So homeownership for folks who wouldn't, but for our efforts, have an opportunity to buy a home of their own. And so it's kind of a wonderful source from which to create a resource to help other folks buy a home is if the housing market is booming, take a little bit of that growth that happens and divert that to help folks who aren't as fortunate be able to buy homes of their own. So that's kind of the thinking behind it. And thank you kindly for allowing me to speak this morning.
We have this large amount of federal money coming in that second COVID bill. Right now, the language still has that limited to rental assistance. I think we all need to keep lobbying our representatives in Washington to make that more flexible so that we can call it housing assistance as opposed to rental assistance. So we can do some work there. We are now joined by Jeff Washburn, City of Lakes Community Land Trust. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chair Hausman. My name is Jeff Washburn, Executive Director with the City of Lakes Community Land Trust in Minneapolis. Thank you as well, members, for the opportunity to speak to this item. The City of Lakes Community Land Trust is a community land trust that serves the city of Minneapolis proper. Over the past 18 years, we've now been able to assist 430 households achieve home ownership in Minneapolis through over 330 properties. We're coming up on close to our 100th resale, and those 100 resales occurred without having to invest additional affordability investments to keep those homes affordable. And truly, that's the beauty of the community land trust model. On average, while we're allowed to serve households up to 80% of median income, we serve households on average at 51% of median income, and 56% of the households that we serve are community of color households in the city of Minneapolis. We've benefited from over $13 million of State of Minnesota investments over the last 18 years, creating those affordable ownership opportunities. So a lot has been done through state investments and definitely leveraged with local and other sources of affordability and rehab assistance on properties. Like Mr. Corey, I just wanted to talk to you a couple of items today. One is just to really put a hard point on the racial disparities that exist in the state. I'd like to talk about the need and specifically the need for ownership, affordable home ownership investments here in the state of Minnesota. The what, you know, what would we be able to do with added investments in affordable home ownership in the state? And then just kind of talking about the impact that we're seeing here in this most recent housing market. I've been going pretty deep on kind of research and where we were, where we are, and I'm pretty blown away when I see that the home ownership disparity gap is actually worse today than it was in 1980 in the state of Minnesota. And when you look at that, at that time, less or just a titch over 3% of the state's population were households of color. Now we're sitting at close to 21%. And so the problem has gotten worse in the sense the disparity is worse, but also just the magnitude when we're talking about the sources are going to be needed to solve for this disparity for over 20% of the state's population is a much bigger thing that we need to work on if we're really serious about making a dent in this huge disparity that exists. Kind of coinciding with that, over the last 9 years, through the state's annual impact award funding round, roughly 4.2% of those awards have gone to affordable ownership. And that's varied anywhere between $7 and $14 million a year, with an average of about $10 million a year. What we're trying to do is just say, yes, it's a sizable investment, but even by tripling that amount, it still would be a fraction of what the Housing Finance Agency invests in affordable home ownership on an annual basis as it relates to their awards. And we could easily double or triple the amount of affordable home ownership that we create in the state. This would have a huge impact, as Mr. Corey mentioned, in that our membership scattered across the state as well serves households of color on average compared to the relative geographies that each of our organizations serve at a rate of about six times that of the current ownership rate in those geographies. So really just by creating that opportunity to invest more in our organizations, we feel that we could start to make some incremental impact on this disparity that exists in the state. Yes, it's a significant asset we have before this committee in the state, but relative to all the other investments, if we're really serious about solving some of these real challenges, we think that this is a very viable solution. And estimating that the funds that would come from this ask would be a part of how we'd get to increasing the on average of about $10 million invested in affordable home ownership production to increase that to $30 million. Hopeful that maybe $10 million a year on average could be generated through this mortgage registry and deed tax from the state. This year already at our organization, we're seeing over 50 attendees at our home buyer education orientations. The most recent home that we listed in South Minneapolis had 18 applications in for that property. And there's a number of hoops that fortunately, unfortunately, that are in place for our buyers, but buyers have to put in an application. They have to attend first time home buyer education. They have to attend one of our orientations. They have to be mortgage pre-approved before that's considered a viable application. And there are 18 low income households buying for just that one property. The need is huge. And I think all of our organizations are feeling the pressure of dozens of households who would love the opportunity to do better for themselves and their families if they had that opportunity. Housing is a means to a much bigger goal of creating stability for households, creating a space for folks to take care of themselves and their families, and to start to think about what's going to come up next in their lives so that they can do better for themselves. And we truly do believe that home ownership has to be part of that affordability continuum. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Members, do we have any questions of either the author or our two testifiers? Mr. Worth, any hands up?
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Olson has a question.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Schultz, for bringing this bill forward. It's good to see you, Jeff Corey from Duluth, sharing about some of the things I was going to mention about our needs in Duluth in terms of our housing stock and the tools we need at our disposal here to ensure affordable home ownership. And so I'm glad to see this bill coming forward. I think it's a nice blend of talking about what the testifiers mentioned around, you know, our racial home ownership gap, which is huge in all parts of the state, and this being a tool to work on that, as well as the tools mentioned that we need here in Duluth in terms of the housing stock we have and some of the things that currently we have at our disposal aren't really fitting the bill for what we need. So it's good to see this bill coming forward. And I think my question is actually going to be if Minnesota Housing is here and would be willing to field the question. I think it's more to them. But my thought and question, I know in this committee we talk about the vast needs of kind of the entire continuum of making sure people have stable housing, affordable housing being a piece of this home ownership, being a piece of this affordable home ownership. So I'm wondering if MHFA would just be willing to comment about what kind of their work in seeing this tool and, you know, how we're going to be expanding and growing access to affordable home ownership as kind of part of the agency's work in this, as I know. You know, the funding appropriated to this is meant to supplement traditional funding, you know, not replace them. And just wondering if the agency could speak to any of that.
I know Mr. Baumtrog is probably on because he's testifying later. Mr. Baumtrog?
Hi, good morning, Chair Hausman. Ryan Baumtrog, Assistant Commissioner for Policy and Community Development at Minnesota Housing. And Representative Olson, while the agency can't support the bill that's in front of you today because of it's not being in the governor's budget, the governor does have an increase. The highest percentage to the governor's budget for housing is to this program. And so I think that's an indication that the governor supports and the agency supports more resources for affordable home ownership development. As the testifiers mentioned, this is a program that received a one-time appropriation before, was significantly oversubscribed. Then we've received funding in the base, but it's $250,000 a year, and we know the needs are significant, and we know a lot of developers and communities across the state didn't apply because the funding pot was so low, and so we're looking for ways to increase that. So that is, this program is a part of the governor's overall $14 million increase to the agency's base budget.
So Olson, follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. That was what I was hoping for, and I know we never want to take anything away to, we need to focus on the entire continuum, but I'm glad to see this focus on affordable home ownership as a piece that we're talking about today. So thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Worth, other questions?
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Tice has her hand up.
Representative Tice.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just another comment. Having heard, Representative Schultz talk about Representative Fabian. We've been working on this for a long time. And what we see, and in fact, I was stopped today and asked about workforce housing because we just aren't seeing it. And that's going to be a big game changer when we start looking at what that's going to mean for our different communities when they're starting to get back from this COVID and start opening up and expanding businesses. We just don't have the housing. And we don't have housing from unaffordable to first time to basically multi-housing so that we can just get people into our communities and then get them into a home from there. Obviously, talking to Mayor Fabian, his goal is mostly just to get them there to check the joint out because not everybody loves all different places. And so we're also looking for some multi-housing as well. I'm not sure if money is included with this, and I'm sure that it is because just the nature of it. I didn't see it expressly, but I've been looking at a lot of different things this morning. We need to continue to fight on this. I'm hearing we just don't have workforce housing. We don't have workers. And I think that also goes into the affordable housing too. In St. Cloud, we've got the gamut on a much smaller scale. And we have a lot of folks working on it. But goodness, we've got a lot of businesses that are really struggling to figure out how they're going to go forward pandemic or not, because we don't have the housing that they've needed for the last, pick a number, 8 years. And we need to get serious about this. And I'm glad to see that Representative Schultz has us here again. We need to do this. We need to continue to do this until we can finally get it over the finish line. And I think we can do it this year because there is a great need. We know there's a great need, and I think everybody else knows it too. So thank you, Representative Schultz, for bringing this forward. I'm excited for it because I'm hearing about it in St. Cloud. I'm hearing it from a lot of different people that we just don't have the housing, whether it be the city planner, realtors, or anybody just looking for a home. So we really have to do some great work on this, and I think this is part of it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yesterday I met with Cook County, and they wanted to talk about their needs in their part of the state for workforce housing. And we talked about Representative Erdahl's bill, which we heard early in the session, and you may recall he had an amendment that he offered increasing the amount in his bill to $3 million. And what Cook County said yesterday is they could use $3 million just in Cook County. so that's the those are the issues we have. Mr. Worth, other members?
Madam Chair, there are no other member questions at this time.
Okay. Representative Schultz, do you have final comments?
I want to thank my testifiers for being here today and for advocating for this legislation. I also will note, members, that this language was included in the tax bonding omnibus bill last session, but was taken out at the last moment, and $4 million was appropriated for this program. And this program is really important. You know, it's very much overprescribed, so there's definitely a lot of demand. And also just to note that this would at least double the number of home ownership units funded annually without diverting any of the funds currently from resources for rental housing. So members, I'm looking for your support and hope we can get it done this session. So thank you for hearing the bill, Chair Houseman and members.
Thank you. I will renew my motion that House File 998 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. Mr. Wilcox, please take the roll.
Houseman?
Aye.
Howard?
Aye.
Tice?
Aye.
McBadger?
Aye.
Bliss?
Aye.
Gomez?
Aye.
Son?
Aye.
Heinrich?
Aye.
Her?
Aye.
Jurgens?
Excuse me, Jurgens, aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Farr?
Aye.
And Dreyer?
Aye.
Madam Chair, that is 13 ayes and 0 nays.
There being 13 ayes and 0 nays, the motion prevails and the bill is referred. Thank you for coming. Now we have House File 1084, Representative Agbaje, and I will move House File 1084 to bring that before us, and this bill will be laid over. Representative Agbaje, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Today I am presenting House File 1084, which is a bill to increase the maximum loan amount for the Rehabilitation Loan Program. This is an existing program of the Housing Finance Agency that assists low-income homeowners in financing basic home improvements that directly affect the safety of their homes. So the program serves very low-income homeowners, making less than 30% of area median income. The program allows low-income homeowners the ability to make repairs, such as addressing lead paint hazards, repairing or replacing a furnace or boiler, a mold remediation, and repairing or replacing a faulty roof. And such repairs like these can be costly, and the Rehabilitation Loan Program supports homeowners in the work they need to do to keep their homes habitable and energy efficient. The loans under the program are structured with 0% interest and are forgivable after terms of 10 to 15 years, depending on the type of property. Rehabilitation loans are currently limited to a maximum amount of $27,000. The current cap does not fully address the cost of making significant home repairs. And this bill would increase the maximum amount to $40,000. A $40,000 cap accounts for inflation from when the maximum amount was established in 2009, and it addresses specific labor and material cost increases within the home construction market. Most importantly, it better serves very low-income homeowners who need help making critical health and safety repairs in order to stay in their homes, both stabilizing their housing situation and preserving their greatest asset. With that, I will now turn it over to a couple of testifiers with us this morning who can further speak to the value of this bill.
We have two testifiers, Noah Hobbs. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
I'm Noah Hobbs. Thanks, Chair Hausman, for allowing me to testify today. I'm with Wonder of Community Housing up in Duluth, and I can cut my testimony about a third now because Jeff Corey has already eloquently stated the work that we do. And so I'm the lending director at OneRoof. We do a bunch of home rehabilitation loans for folks that otherwise would not be able to afford them or qualify due to either poor credit, debt to income ratios, and all of that. So we serve folks that currently don't qualify for mainstream financing at a traditional institution. And we are one of the administrators of the Rehabilitation Loan Program, RLP. We do about 20 to 30 of those a year. And I have to say that it's a great product for the folks that we serve, people that earn 30% of the area median income or less. They don't have other options afforded to them. What we see when folks come for this service, it's oftentimes a roof, a furnace, a water heater, lead remediation, you know, radon mitigation, all of those necessary things to have a healthy, safe, and stable housing situation and things that need to be fixed, right? Like these aren't things that you can just ignore for a long time without having a negative impact on your housing situation. So what our customers end up doing is if they didn't have this program available to them, they'd have to either not fix it. So that means going without heat, hot water, a lateral line, a non-leaking roof, or they have to finance it with a high interest rate credit card, furthering, you know, I think that detrimental impact for low-income folks by putting it on a credit card. So that's the two options that people really have if this program did not exist. So I can't speak highly enough of that for what it means for low-income homeowners in the state of Minnesota, specifically in our service region. But also, I mean, the fact of the matter is, right, $27,000 from 2009 got you a heck of a lot more then than it does now 10 years later. And so what we oftentimes see when folks are coming to OneRoof for services, they'll have a roof and they'll have a furnace, and that's about two-thirds of their maximum loan amount. And we have to make cuts, and those cuts aren't luxury items like granite countertops or hot tubs, right? Like they are needed improvements in their home to extend the lifespan of that house, which is really important with the housing crunch that we have specifically in Duluth, but across the state of Minnesota as well. And so I think raising that to 40,000, you'll still have to make some painful cuts. We have some of the oldest housing stock in the state here in Duluth. But it does go a lot further in making sure that those folks can have a safe and stable house. And then I think the other big benefit, right, for low-income homeowners, if they don't finance this, what happens is they either have to wait until their home is condemned for human habitation and go into either a homeless situation, or they have to, you know, turn over rent, and then they lose equity in their home. And one of the bigger ways for low to moderate income households to build wealth is through equity. And so by allowing folks to remain in their home that is healthy, safe, and stable, it also allows that on the back end as well for folks to continue to build that wealth. So we are fully in support of raising the cap from $27,000 to $40,000. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And we're joined now by Mike Robertson, Twin Cities Habitat for Humanity. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning. Mike Robertson, a Brush with Kindness Program Manager at Twin Cities Habitat for Humanity. Thank you, Chair Hausman and members of the committee. As many of you know, the mission of Twin Cities Habitat is to bring people together to create, preserve, and promote affordable homeownership and to advance racial equity in housing. We're asking for your support for House File 1084 to increase the maximum loan amount for the Rehabilitation Loan Program. Our home repair program called the Brush with Kindness helps families maintain safe and stable homes. We use a combination of skilled staff, volunteers, and contractors to provide exterior painting and interior health and safety repairs, and we've partnered with more than 2,000 homeowners in the 7-county metro area since the program started in 1989. The vast majority of our home repair clients are making 30% of area median income or less, And these are the same set of homeowners that would qualify for the RLP program under 30% of AMI. Many of these homeowners are older adults living on fixed incomes. Some are families struggling with physical or mental disabilities. Some are military veterans. Often they're referred to us by municipalities due to unresolved citations, and they face large fines or even a condemnation that can lead to homelessness if their homes are not repaired. Just going to share a brief story. We worked recently with an older woman whom I'll call Mary, who lived in the Rondo neighborhood of St. Paul. She's an African-American woman in her 80s who has lived in the same house for almost her entire life, and she inherited that house when her parents had passed away many years ago. When I met her, the exterior of her home looked like a typical kind of scrape and paint project that we do all the time. However, inside, I found that her only functioning water source was a cold water tap in her upstairs bathroom. She confessed that she had lived without hot water for 3 years, filling milk jugs upstairs and heating water on the stove so she could bathe, cook, and wash dishes. So in addition to the exterior painting, our program was able to provide a new water heater and other critical plumbing repairs. We also installed grab bars in her bathroom and a handrail to her basement, simple repairs that improved her safety and allows her to continue living in the home and neighborhood she loves. In the wake of COVID-19, it's critical that homeowners like Mary have a safe place to live and for them to preserve their most valuable asset. But as you all know, the cost of home repair continues to rise, both due to overall inflation and specific increases in the construction market. Softwood lumber, things like 2x4s, have increased over 100% in the last 12 months. And we're finding that the demand for licensed trades like electricians and plumbers have driven costs significantly higher for us and everyone else doing this work in the field. It simply costs more to make these repairs than it did when the RLP program cap of $27,000 was set in 2009. We do not currently administer the RLP program, but we are part of the housing ecosystem serving low-income homeowners statewide. And it's in all of our best interests to ensure that resources are available to support homeowners and that their needs are adequately met. Increasing the maximum RLP loan amount to $40,000 will make a significant difference for low-income homeowners facing critical home repairs. These home repairs do several things. They protect generational wealth creation. They help to maintain affordable neighborhood housing stock. As Jeff mentioned, the older housing stock throughout the state. It also supports the property tax base. Most importantly, home repair prevents homelessness and provides stability and safety both now and in the future. I sincerely ask you to support this bill, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. And that story is amazing. You imagine the transforming nature of suddenly having a hot water heater and not having to heat and carry water. It's a powerful story.
Thank you.
Members, do we have questions for either the author or our two testifiers? Mr. Wirth.
Madam Chair, there are no questions at this time. Madam Chair, Representative Tice has a question.
Representative Tice.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just having issues with my mouse today. Representative Agbaje, how did you come to 40,000?
Representative Agbaje.
So I believe this is a number that takes into consideration the inflation costs and the cost of materials over the past 11 years. And so I think this is a number that kind of helps continue to support these low-income families while also taking into consideration those increasing costs. But if either of my testifiers have additional information on that, I'd be happy to defer to them.
And this, so it's 12 years, as I understand it, since that amount was raised, right? So you're factoring in inflation over that time. Do either of the testifiers have any other response to that? I'm assuming, Representative Agbaje, that you work with somebody on the...
Madam Chair, it's just a kind of a, I don't think it's high enough.
Oh, I see.
Put that on your calendar. I don't think it's high enough. Knowing what has happened in construction, that's why I'm kind of asking if that isn't enough for a family, do we have other places that they can go to? I know that Representative Farr, you know, works at a bank and there are some bank loans and stuff that we can do. But I guess I'm looking, are there some other grants or anything that we can look at? Because I know just from when we've been out of remodeling for since 2011, so 10 years, 2013, not quite 10 years. It has gone up substantially. And so I'm really concerned about, you know, are we, this is one area where I think, I don't know that a $40,000 cap is going to make everything, especially if you need to do things like a roof, windows. I mean, those are usually when we purchased a home, roof, windows, and insulation were our favorite things to do because they added the most value to the home in that it kept everybody warm and safe and happy. And so I'm just wondering, you know, do we have another vehicle that we can tap that we can have tell kind of guide people to? Well, if your remodel needs more than this, you know, this is how we can help you with that. Is there anything else out there like that?
This bill is going to be laid over, so that gives us a little bit of time to do some more. I don't know whether could we put Mr. Baumtag on notice again to
Madam Chair, it seems Mike Robertson has something to add.
Oh, Mike, Mr. Robertson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So just to give you some context, Habitat is part of kind of a coalition of home repair organizations in the Twin Cities. So NeighborWorks Home Partners is one of them, Rebuilding Together Twin Cities. So in addition to programs like the RLP, what we wind up doing for some of these larger ticket items is to collaborate with other organizations that might have funding sources of their own. I know some of the city municipalities that we work with can stack the RLP with CDBG funding to increase or to leverage those sorts of federal funding sources as well. But you're right. I mean, sometimes $40,000 is not enough for the types of repairs that we see the need for.
Madam Chair, I just want to make sure that we have enough money to make sure we do this. So this is one area, especially where I feel like we could really do a world of good and, you know, in different ways, keep our, you know, our affordable housing where it's at and just make sure that everybody's safe and warm.
Mm-hmm. And preserving naturally occurring
yes.
affordable housing at
yes.
the same time. Mr. Worth, other members?
Madam Chair, there are no other questions at this time.
Do we have any final comments from Representative Ebeje?
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you so much. And thank you, Representative Tice, for those comments. You know, I agree with you. I definitely do think that there should be more funding put into our housing needs across the spectrum, and especially in places where we can support our homeowners, especially our low-income homeowners that do a lot of work in preserving this type of housing. So with that, I would just to say, you know, I believe that this is a very useful program for what we have. I'll definitely take those comments into consideration. To see if the cap can be increased even further, but also really appreciate the support of this committee to hear this bill to ensure that we are really providing the necessary resources that we need for our housing. Thank you.
Thank you. So this bill, House File 1084, will be a laid over for possible inclusion.
Okay.
We'll be revisiting it. I'm now going to hand over the gavel to Representative Howard for the remainder of the committee for my bill presentation. Chair Howard, you have the floor.
Thank you, Representative Hausman. And would you like to move your bill before the committee?
I will move House File 1252 to get it before us, and this bill will be laid over.
Representative Hausman, please proceed.
So House File 1252 is Minnesota Housing's policy and technical bill. As the agency administers programs and works with partners, there are issues that come up, and it is important we continue to make changes to improve access, to provide clarity to existing programs, to expand program eligibility where we can, and continue to help with historic levels of need and funding that is being deployed all across the state. This bill has three articles that Ryan Baumtrag from Minnesota Housing will walk through in further detail. Article 1 deals with affordable housing eligibility. Article 2, grant and loan criteria and uses. Article 3, technical and clarifying changes. Senator Dreheim is the Senate author, and so we're still figuring out what vehicles will be our negotiating tools, and so he is the Senate author for that convenience. And Mr. Chair, Ryan Baumtrag will walk through the bill.
Assistant Commissioner Baumtrag.
Great. Thanks, Chair Howard, and thanks, Representative Hausman. Members of the committee, happy to be here today to walk through in greater detail the agency's policy and technical bill. As I walk through, open to questions throughout, I'm going to hit on a number of the agency's programs. I will point out as much as possible some of the connections to the bills that you heard just today, as well as make some connections to some of the governor's budget recommendations for the agency. So starting in Article 1, I'll just walk through each section of the bill and by article. And Section 1 of the bill starts with the agency's disaster recovery loan program. So we're looking to, in this case, add some eligibility should there be a disaster and should the agency get an appropriation for capacity building resource. This change would make federally recognized tribes and tribal entities eligible to receive capacity building grants. So there's nothing the agency will do immediately with this, but should there be a disaster, we wanted to broaden out eligibility so that federal recognized tribes could be eligible should a disaster happen and we get an appropriation for the program. Section 2 relates to technical assistance and capacity building work that the agency does across the state. And we're looking to clarify some language around capacity building support provided to some community partners. And this clarification would help with the agency and able to provide some financial support to partners to help increase the capacity of those partners, given whether it's homeownership development or rental development. Often the agency receives requests for fairly nominal dollars, and we'd like some clarity that we have the ability to do that with agency resources. Section 3 relates to the state appropriated Family Homelessness Prevention and Assistance Program. And this program, we're really looking to reduce some of the burden and onus on our applicants. Part of the program requires each grantee, and in greater Minnesota, that can be upwards of 5, 6, 7 counties to seek county board resolution of support to operate the program in their committees. And we think that this is a pretty high administrative hurdle and rather just too much bureaucracy. So we're hoping that with support that we could remove this burden to get counties to say it's okay to operate the program in their county. Section 4, this relates to the Workforce and Affordable Home Ownership Program, which was the topic of one of the bills just heard. The main changes we're looking to make with this provision is to add counties as eligible applicants. They're currently not eligible for the program. With the recent funding that we just briefly mentioned earlier, we had a situation where a county established land trust applied, and it created a little conversation in the agency about where some further clarity could be added where a county has established a land trust. Land trusts are clearly eligible, but there was some concern about counties. And so given that situation, and also as we hear across the state, there's counties that are looking to do more housing and housing development, and this could be a program that they look to help with those efforts. As I mentioned earlier in the hearing, the governor is recommending a $1.5 million increase to this program as well. Section 5 and 6, of Article 1 relate to the Workforce Housing Development Program. So this is a program that is exclusively rental housing in greater Minnesota with a focus on market rate housing. And we're looking to amend the definition of eligible project area to include tribes and cities on tribal reservations as eligible applicants, since they're not clearly eligible in current law. We're also looking then to make kind of a consistent change to allow matching funds from a tribe or tribal community should a tribal community or city on a reservation apply for the program, that matching funds would be eligible for the agency to part. The statute contemplates us scoring for additional leverage, and we want to make sure that leverage is broadly and more consistently counted for this program. And this is another one of the programs that the governor is recommending a $2 million increase. We currently receive a $4 million appropriation, and the governor's budget recommendation has this as a $6 million. So again, not not meeting the needs of workforce housing, rental housing in greater Minnesota, but certainly we want to do more through this program. Article 2, grant and loan criterion uses. Sections 1 and 2 relate to the bill that you just heard with some slight changes that I'll walk through. We're looking to eliminate the combined loan to value requirement for the rehabilitation loan program. So this is, as you heard from previous testifiers in the previous bill, the agency's main owner-occupied rehab that's really serving homeowners at, you know, around 20% AMI, 30% AMI. And we're looking to remove the combined loan to value requirement for the program. This has been identified as a barrier for some of the lowest value homes, particularly in greater Minnesota, but also identified as a barrier to utilizing the rehab loan program in serving manufactured homes. We're also looking to raise the maximum loan amount to $35,000. The bill you just heard increased it to $40,000. As was previously mentioned, this is an amount that has not increased since 2009. If we were to index it just to inflation, it would be about increase to $32,000. So the agency is looking for a slight increase above kind of indexing it to inflation to $35,000. The agency receives just over $2.7 million per year for this program. We did a report where the needs exceed $50 million per year for this program. So we know the needs are absolutely significant. We're concerned about increasing the amount too much given current funding levels with our state appropriations. This is a program where we maximize the entirety of the state appropriation and then supplement the program with agency resources, but as the loan value gets up, the ability for the agency to support that scale and that need is not there. And so at this point in time, we're supportive and looking for an increase to $35,000, recognizing the inflationary pressures, but then the cost of construction. And certainly we appreciate that even at $35,000, there are needs far greater than $35,000 that can go unfunded at times. We're also looking to allow for the replacement of manufactured homes instead of the repair. So we've heard from a number of our administrators across the state that as they look to do improvements in manufactured homes, often it can be just as expensive or more expensive than the value of the home. And it calls into question whether we should look for and allow that homeowner or renter to actually replace the home instead of making improvements to that existing home. So in a lot of ways, we think that the language in sections 1 and 2 is consistent with the bill you heard, just at a slightly lower dollar threshold of an increase for the loan, and then a few other changes, particularly geared to better serving homeowners that live in manufactured homes. Section 3 of Article 2 relates to outstanding notes and bonds. So in statute, Minnesota Housing is currently limited to $5 billion in outstanding notes and bonds, which includes all notes and bonds issued by the agency. This provision is about Minnesota Housing's debt and not the state of Minnesota's debt. So as a reminder for the committee, Minnesota Housing is a discrete component unit of the state. We receive a separate credit rating from the state, so the state agency's debt is not the debt of the state of Minnesota. Minnesota Housing has an issuer rating of AA1 by Moody's and AA+ through Standards and Poor's, and then some of our individual offerings are sometimes rated AAA. So the $5 billion amount has not been modified since 2008. Which was both prior to the creation of housing infrastructure bonds and also changes in how we issue bonds and notes for our single family mortgage programs in our homeownership lending and first time home buyer programs. So this language would modify the calculation of the types of notes and bonds where the agency, not the state of Minnesota, has a general obligation bond or obligation pledge. So the change would change the calculation, would exclude limited obligation notes and bonds. And housing infrastructure bonds are the greatest amount of limited obligation notes and bonds that we issue. And from the agency's perspective, we're already limited in the amount of housing infrastructure bonds that the agency can issue based on what is authorized by the legislature in bonding bills or other areas of law where the legislature authorized and states how much we can issue for housing infrastructure bonds. Without that authority, the agency can't issue. And so we believe there's already a limit and a cap on that, and therefore would argue that it should not be included as it relates to the other type of revenue bonds that the agency issues. Nearly 90% of the notes and bonds issued by Minnesota Housing are revenue bonds, which makes them different than the state. When the state is issuing general obligation bonds, these are actually revenue bonds that are secured by mortgage-backed securities with mortgages that the agency finances. So when people pay us back, either on the rental side or first-time homebuyers, as they pay down their debt, that those resources come back to the agency and then are used to pay off the debt. So they're mortgage revenue bonds. To my knowledge, as it relates to the general obligation pledge that the agency uses as a backstop for our revenue bonds, the agency has never accessed or utilized the general obligation bond since we were created in 1971. Section 4 and 5 relate to the housing infrastructure bond program and some clarifications of language there. The one provision changes, eliminates the type of housing infrastructure bond debt, not the eligible use related to homeownership development. So I want to make it really clear that deleting this language around the type of housing infrastructure bond debt that we issue will not impact the agency continuing to utilize housing infrastructure bonds for homeownership development. There's two sections in the housing infrastructure bond statute. One relates to the type of debt that we issue, which varies by whether it's home ownership or rental, or whether the owner is a nonprofit or for-profit. And then there's another section of law that talks about the eligible uses, which includes senior housing, preservation of federally assisted, permanent supportive housing, manufactured home parks, and home ownership development. And so this change is deleting, eliminating a type of debt that we will not use to finance home ownership development through housing infrastructure bonds. This area of statute also modify the definition of senior as it relates to developing and new construction of senior housing to focus on senior households and not an individual senior. We think this was just a mistake. We typically, for all of our programs, look at household income and not one of the members in the household. So this clarifies that we look at senior household income. And it also, the sections 4 and 5 eliminate language requiring service plans for senior housing. This is difficult to operationalize, and we require the developer to certify that they are working on service plans within the community. Lastly, Article 3, technical and clarifying changes relates to the community land trusts. Community land trusts are financed through the agency through a number of programs, including the Challenge Program, which is a state-appropriated program that's used for homeownership and rental. On the homeownership side, we use it for community land trusts. And the Challenge Program has an income limit of 115% area median income. And in looking in Department of Revenue, we saw that there's an 80% AMI reference. And so we want to align income limits when we finance community land trusts through the various programs, whether it be the Challenge Program, the Workforce and Affordable Home Ownership Program we talked about earlier, and also the Housing Infrastructure Bond Program, which is relatively new. So with that, I will stop. There's a lot of changes for a number of programs. I wanted to make sure I covered all the details, but happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Bontrag. Mr. Wirth, are there any questions?
Giving members a few minutes. No, Mr. Chair, there are no questions at this time.
Thanks, Mr. Wirth. Representative Hausman, any final comments on the bill?
I have no further comments. Again, this is the agency's policy and technical bill. A lot of detail there, a lot of technical complexity. As I said, we're still trying to determine how we negotiate with Senator Dreheim, who's the Senate author. So more to be said about that.
I don't see any other questions. So Madam Chair, would you want to renew your motion?
This is laid over, so House File 1252, which I earlier moved, is laid over.
Very good. And that is it for the day. Thank you, members, for the discussion. Our next meeting will be on Thursday, March 4th at 10:30 a.m. And with no further business before us, we are adjourned.